The reading is from page 485 in the Pew Bible. It is Nehemiah chapter 2. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought for him, I took the wine and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before, so the king asked me, "Why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? This cannot be nothing but sadness of heart." I was very much afraid, but I said to the king, "May the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my fathers are buried lies in ruins, and its gates have been destroyed by fire?" The king said to me, "What is it you want?" Then I prayed to the God of heaven, and I answered the king, "If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city in Judah, where my fathers are buried, so that I can rebuild it." Then the king, with the queen sitting beside him, asked me, "How long will your journey take, and when will you get back?" It pleased the king to send me, so I set a time. I also said to him, "If it pleases the king, may I have letters to the governors of Trans-Euphrates, so that they will provide me safe conduct until I arrive in Judah. And may I have a letter to Asaph, keeper of the king's forest, so he will give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel by the temple and for the city wall and for the residence I will occupy." And because the gracious hand of God was upon me, the king granted my requests. So I went to the governors of Trans-Euphrates and gave them the king's letters. The king had also sent army officers and cavalry with me. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard about this, they were very much disturbed that someone had come to promote the welfare of the Israelites. I went to Jerusalem, and after staying there 3 days, I set out during the night with a few men. I had not told anyone what my God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. There was no mount with me except the one I was riding on. By night I went out through the valley gate towards the jackal well, and the dung gate, examining the walls of Jerusalem, which had been broke down, and its gates, which had been destroyed by fire. Then I moved on towards the fountain gate and the king's pool, but there was not enough room for my mount to get through. So I went up the valley by night, examining the wall. Finally, I turned back and re-entered through the valley gate. The officials did not know where I had gone, or what I was doing, because as yet I had said nothing to the Jews, or the priests, or nobles, or officials, or any others who would be doing the work. Then I said to them, "You see the trouble we are in. Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and we will no longer be in disgrace." I also told them about the gracious hand of my God upon me, and what the king had said to me. They replied, "Let us start rebuilding." So they began this good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite official, and Geshem the Arab heard about this, they mocked and ridiculed us. "What is this you are doing?" they asked. "Are you rebelling against the king?" I answered them by saying, "The God of heaven will give us success. We, his servants, will start rebuilding. But as for you, you have no share in Jerusalem, or any claim, or historic right to it."
Does anybody recognize this? Well, do you? What is it? Mission Impossible. The young people wouldn't recognize that. Do you remember that from the old days, Doug? Doug, surely you must. His memory's gone. That's a shame. But, in the old days, Mission Impossible. And then, of course, Tom Cruise and the films have updated it, haven't they? Much more exciting. What? Anyway, but Mission Impossible, everybody loves that Mission Impossible. I always love the bit where they say this.
intercept it is to get the document and bring Anna Kirkoska to safety. As always, should you or any member of your IM force be caught or killed, the Secretary will disavow any knowledge of your actions. This tape will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
We always had that bit, didn't we? The tape of... Maybe this tape will self-destruct. This is a bit retro, isn't it? I've had this for a long time. You can still get batteries for it. It's incredible. Yes, your mission, should you choose to accept it, is... Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is... Nehemiah had a mission. The reason we've chosen Nehemiah to look at for the next number of weeks is because it reflects who we are as a body of God's people, as a church, and the mission that he has called us to. He gave Nehemiah a mission. It wasn't a mission that just came out of anywhere. It came out of prayer, and that's what we looked at last week. Remember, look at chapter 1. Talked about how for 4 months, day and night, Nehemiah prayed. He got that report. The group of guys came back from Jerusalem. He said, how are things in Jerusalem? They said, it's terrible. People are completely disillusioned, demoralized. The walls are broken down. The gates have been burnt. And something captivated Nehemiah because he'd never been to Jerusalem. He was born in captivity. But his heart was for God's people who had returned to Jerusalem and the state of the city, God's people. And he prayed for 4 months until God gave him an opportunity. Because this is how God chooses his will. It is through prayer that God burdens our hearts. It is through prayer that God equips us. It is through prayer that God envisions us. And that was the state of the people. They were in disgrace. The city was in a mess. God's city. What is your mission? What is our mission as God's team, and are we willing to accept it? Remember last week I said about so many people I ask, Christians, how are their Christian journeys going? Is it going well? Are you treading water? Or is it going backwards? And so often people will say, I'm treading water. I'm not going backwards. I'm not going forwards. I simply am. But God doesn't want us to tread water. He doesn't want us to simply survive. He wants us to live. And so why do we not make strides forward? Why are so many of us disappointed with our Christian lives or Christian existence with us as a church? Why? Is it because God gives us opportunities? He speaks to us. But we want to play it safe. Sometimes God's mission is big, scary, demanding. It's easier to play it safe, to play church, to read the Bible, to pray, to do all the things that we see that we do. But maybe God demands more of us. Maybe he wants us to move to a different country. Maybe he wants us to give away all that we have to the poor. Isn't that what he asked of the rich young ruler? What does God ask us to do? And are we willing to accept the mission? But his mission is always demanding, always scary. Jesus gave the disciples a mission, and it was really big. His last words, as before he ascended into heaven in Matthew chapter 28, go into all the world and make disciples. Start here, go there, and then reach out. That was a pretty big mission, wasn't it? And these were ordinary people. Fishermen, tax collectors. But the mission was big. But they had seen his heart for the people. They had already been sent out two by two and told, don't take anything with you. Don't take any money. Don't take an extra chinook. Don't take anything. Just go. And they didn't play it safe. Jesus wouldn't let them play it safe. He was their safety net, and he would not let them fall. And look what they did. Those frightened, fragile followers took the mission to the world and changed it. They didn't play it safe. And nor did Nehemiah. Nehemiah wouldn't play it safe. The walls of Jerusalem represented security of the city, represented the dignity of the city, and his mission was to rebuild the walls. Remember in chapter 1, he reminds God what his promise was. Lord, you said you would take the people, and you said if they turn back to you, you would bring them back. You would restore your glory, the glory of the people, the glory of the city. And that was Nehemiah's mission, to build the walls, build the people. But Nehemiah's mission was driven by his vision. Verse 17 says this, after he's gone to Jerusalem and he's talking to some of the other people there, you can see the trouble we're in. Jerusalem lies in ruins and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the walls of Jerusalem and we will no longer be in disgrace. He had this vision of God's glory because it was all about God's glory. This was God's city, the holy city, Jerusalem, the city of peace, where the prophet said people would flock to, where they would come and worship God in his temple. Here it lay in ruins, and the people were demoralized. This was his vision, and his mission was to rebuild through the strength of God who would go with him. What is our vision as a church? Well, look up the website. It says this, to be a church that reaches out to men and women of North County Wicklow and with Christ's transforming message of grace, love, and forgiveness. To be a church that reaches out with the transforming message of grace, love, and forgiveness. We know our world is in a bit of a disarray. People who are blind, people who are deaf to the one who has made them and who loves them. We can see our decay of society is going down and down and down and down and down. And what can we do about it? Can we do anything? Can we truly reach out to the people all around us with the transforming message of Christ's grace, renewal, and forgiveness? Or is a mission impossible? We can come up with a vision statement or a mission statement, and it sounds very nice on words on a piece of paper. I don't know how many churches around the country have come up with mission statements or mission outreach plans to their community. And they spend months and months preparing it and thinking about it and praying about it, and they put it in a document, and it looks beautiful and it sounds great, and they set it on a shelf, and nothing is done about it. Is it too hard? Is it too difficult? Are we too scared? Have we no energy? Are we disillusioned? Are we demoralized? But we're called to this mission. And on our website it says this is what we will be. A church that reaches out with a message of transformation. Even on a world scale, we can see our society, a mess. But on a world scale, it's even more of a mess with wars and human trafficking and sexual exploitation and migration crisis because of terrorism, wars, poverty. It's huge, isn't it? Can anything be done about that? Does the church have anything to say? Or is it a mission impossible? Nehemiah's mission was driven by his vision, and he refused to accept the status quo. The news came back, it seemed too big, and he was so far away. He had never been there. And he had a lovely cushy lifestyle. He was cupbearer to the king. He was in a palace, had the ear of the king. He wasn't hungry or thirsty. He had somewhere to live. He had a lovely life. He could have said, it's nothing to do with me. I'll pray for them. But I can't do anything about it. I'm not a builder. I'm not a leader. I'm not a visionary. And yet God placed something inside him to make him a leader, a visionary, and a builder. he refused to accept the status quo. William Carey, who you may have heard of, known as the father of modern missions, said a great line, expect great things from God, attempt great things for God. Expect great things from God, attempt great things for God. William Carey has had an amazing effect, but William Carey had a really hard time. Many people thought mission wasn't our job. If God wanted to convert the heathen, he was sorted out. He doesn't need you and me, William. But when William Carey read his Bible, he saw something different. He saw a Christ who said, go into all the world and make disciples. And he refused to accept the status quo. He refused to accept the thinking of the time. It was a difficult mission, but was it impossible? It had all sorts of ramifications for himself and for his family and for so many things. But he stepped out in faith, believing that this was Christ's will, that this was his mission. He had this wonderful vision of a Christ who says, go and change the world. And don't be frightened because I will be with you. But for Nehemiah to make the mission happen, he had to have a plan, and he did have a plan. He prayed, and God placed a burden in his life, and he knew what God's will is as he prayed. But God equipped him. So he goes to the king, he's serving the king. The king says that he sees he's got a sad face, which was a dangerous thing to have in the presence of a king. You could be killed for having a sad face. The king said to me, what is it you want? Then I prayed to the God of heaven. He had prayed for 4 months day and night, and then suddenly an opportunity arose, a door opened, and there was this quick prayer. Then I prayed to the God of heaven, and then he spoke to the king. And he said, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city in Judah where my ancestors are buried, so that I can rebuild it. He didn't even mention the name Jerusalem, because Jerusalem had all sorts of overtones in the king's mind. So he doesn't mention the name of the city. He just says, a place where my father's tombs have been desecrated. Then the king with the queen sitting beside him asked, how long will your journey take, and when will you get back? It pleased the king to send me, so I set a time. I also said to him, if it pleases the king, may I have letters to the governors of Trans-Euphrates, so that they will also provide me safe conduct until I arrive in Judah. And may I have a letter to Asaph, keeper of the royal park, so he'll give me timber to make the beams for the gates of the citadel of the temple, and for the city wall, and for the residence I will occupy. And because the gracious hand of my God was on me, the king granted my requests. So not only did he pray, but he thought, if this was to happen, what would I need? I'd need visas to get there. And that's what he asks. Can you give me visas to get through this territory to reach Jerusalem? And he would need supplies. He would need wood. He would need all sorts of things. He knew the name of the guy who looked after all that, Asaph. Can you write me a letter to him to say you can have whatever you need? He had a plan in place. So whenever the king said to him, what do you want? He didn't go, I'm not really sure. I'll get back to you. He had it thought out. He had this vision that drove the mission, and the mission needed a plan, and the plan was thought through. How can that city be rebuilt? And he knew exactly what to say to the king when God gave him the opportunity. And as we go forward as a church, and as we think about who we are and what our mission is, and as we have a strategy, and there's a strategy already, we do things, we have plans, and maybe those will be amended, maybe we'll do new things. But as we go forward, we'll do it looking for his will. Last Sunday night, we met in here and we prayed for God's blessing on the work that we do here in the church, for the young people, for the children, for the musicians, for those who are baptized, for the preaching of the word. We went into the hall and we preached for all the youth work and the cup of tea after the service and the craft group and the Bible study group and everything. We prayed for everything that happens in this place. And it was great. And thank you to all of you who came. It was so encouraging. But prayer lies at the heart of who we are. Prayer lies at the heart of what we must do to become the people that God wants us to be so we may fulfill his mission. But of course there will be challenges. And for Nehemiah, he had his problems. Verse 10. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard about this, they were very much disturbed. Disturbed that someone had come to promote the welfare of the Israelites. And then in verse 19. But when Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite official, and Geshem the Arab heard about this, they mocked and ridiculed us. "What's this you're doing?" they said. "Are you rebelling against the king?" So it wasn't going to be easy. Not only did he have to raise the spirits of the people who would do the work, give them a vision for this mission, but he had people on the sidelines who were going to try and make his life difficult. These people were governors. These people were not just Tom, Dick, and Harry on the side. These people were political figures. Sanballat was the chief one. He was the governor of Samaria, which included Judea, where Jerusalem was. Tobiah was the governor, probably, of an area east of Judea. And Geshem would have been a leader in the province of Arabia, which included Edom and the southern part of Judah. So Nehemiah was surrounded with political people who didn't want this city to be rebuilt. And when they heard that he came, when they realized what he was going to do, they weren't happy. They began by ridiculing and mocking. But as each day went on, the threat would get more intense. His life would be under threat because these men didn't want it to happen. They would be a constant thorn in his flesh. But people of God have always been mocked and ridiculed. Doesn't matter if you're at school or at university or at work, even in your family, people can mock you, laugh at you. And it's not nice, but Jesus said, you know, if you follow me, it's not going to be easy. You should expect hard times. Because if this is the way they treated me, Jesus said, what do you think they're going to say about you? What do you think they're going to do to you? If they hate me, they'll hate you. So this was the threat that Nehemiah was under. This is a threat that we are under as well. And even in the wider world, the church, many people are dying today because of faith. Churches destroyed because they're Christians. Isn't that a scary thought? The church has always been and is under attack because the evil one will try his best to stop us from fulfilling our mission. But Jesus is with us. And we must be people of vision. Back in Joel, which is repeated in Acts, says this, in the last days, God says, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughter will prophesy, your young men will see visions, and your old men will dream dreams. Your sons and daughters will prophesy, your young men will see visions, your old men will dream dreams. And this is what God calls us to be, dreamers and visionaries, as he places his spirit upon us and within us. We have to be people who are envisioned by him, who trust him, who can see that the mission that he's called us to is not impossible. It is a mission possible, because with God, all things are possible. If it were down to us, it would never get done. But with him, within and leading. Is there anything we cannot do? Can we reach out into this community, the men and women of North County Wicklow, with the transforming news of Christ? Can we do that? Yeah, we can. Won't be easy. It's not easy. But it's possible. And God gives us His Spirit to empower us to be the people that He calls us to be. It is His mission. Jesus said to the disciples, I want you to go and make disciples. But don't worry, because I will be with you. Always. Wherever you go. Isn't that a great promise? And God always keeps His promises. I will be with you wherever you go. This is your mission. I will envision you. You put the plan into practice. So as we look forward, be excited. Be prayerful. Ask God to give you a vision of your calling, of our calling, of your mission, of our mission. Let Him captivate your life and your heart. Let nothing stand in your way. Don't play safe. Play faith. We're called to walk by faith and not by sight. And He will never let us down. This is God, the one who set that sun in the sky, the one who created this universe. He says, trust me. So let's trust Him. Let's go forward confidently, prayerfully. The mission is not impossible, for He is on our side.